Hippocrates would not have approved of lame excuses.
And I promise to begin exploiting my family before the end of the day.
Nice suit. Thank you.
Very good. You get a gold star.
Hailing frequencies open. You are listening to Treknologic's listening post that goes with Treknologic 197, where we reviewed the Next Generation episode, Up the Long Ladder. First up, Space Mailbag. Ben?
Our first one is from Tekaren Gollum. Tekarangalum.
Hey.
Bonjour, beloved brainstormers barreling through the bellowing nebula, breaking barriers and busting bulwarks, brazenly believing that we are not bound by the ground below. It is I that could... that was a hard one. It is I, the Tekaren Gollum, and I have to tell you something. The last time I was sucked out of an airlock, I happened to float by the bow of the Relativity. And I noticed that one of our figureheads is missing. I couldn't find a trace of her anywhere. I couldn't believe my eyes. We couldn't possibly have left Starbase without a figurehead. What sense does that make? I scanned the ship to no avail. If she was stolen, then it's possible she's still on the ship and someone's hiding her non-life signs. The only way to find out... to find her is to comb the ship deck by deck. Don't worry, I have my most loyal and thorough golem on the job. It'll take the glitter golem several months to sweep the first deck. So in the meantime, I have volunteered my services as interim figurehead. It's a little breezy out here, but I'll manage. Where have we been flying that it's breezy?
Well, you know, that jump into warp can be a little...
Oh. But speaking of the inexplicable ability to disappear, Q2. I like it, though it has its flaws. It's best to forget the Q of TNG, since Voyager Q is just a lovable goof. You can tell it's even Season 7 of Voyager, because all the characters can play their roles in their sleep. There's an air of comfortable complacency in the writing and acting, like when a really, really good actor phones in a performance. It's still great, but you know there's a layer of effort missing. Q2 feels like either a hodgepodge or an homage to previous Q episodes, depending on how generous you feel. It is recycled story elements and a very predictable character arc that hits all of the expected plot beats with curious aplomb. There's nothing particularly original or new going on, there's no sense of danger, and the Voyager crew don't actually develop in any meaningful way. But what makes the episode good is the acting. Q Jr. pulls off a wealth of character development, he plays off of the crew and off of the crew well, and the crew do a great job creating the world for him to play in. Q Senior, though, still not the Q of TNG, is still immensely charming and hilarious as a father out of his depth. There's a great layer of subtext to everyone's performance that I think gives the episode the gravitas to tell a well-trodden story. Also of note, I found Q Junior terrifying on a conceptual level. I know Neelix isn't your favorite, but the idea of a petulant child mutilating your body to shut you up is the stuff of nightmares for me. Also see Twilight Zone, It's a Good Life, and Game of Thrones, Joffrey.
Yes.
I had to stop watching Game of Thrones because of the rotten kid.
Isn't well, good dead? News.
Good news.
You can go back.
I have to say that I'm with Ben on the Naked Seven scene. Basically, the scene works on a you go girl invincibly to an attempt to shame her. However, the implication is that Q Jr. could have and probably has stolen the clothes of women who were offended and possibly terrified. Now we're starting to tread into some bad territory there. And this is where sci-fi and reality start to open up questions. It's like with telepathy. It's a purely sci-fi concept that has a ton of story potential. But if you look close enough to analyze it, you can make some uncomfortable parallels. For example, should mind reading be thought of as a form of personal violation? Or maybe you have a Groundhog Day scenario, and after learning so much, you start to woo or manipulate someone under false pretenses, or even the fantasy scenario of a ghost possessing and controlling someone else. It's all a fictional scenario, and you don't have to make everything have a serious parallel, but sometimes the writers stumble a little too close to that line. I just want to point out, when it comes to that concept there, I think Babylon 5 did a really good job with how they handled telepathy and how people viewed it.
Well, there were also actual episodes of Star Trek where it was handled that reading someone's mind without their permission was an invasion.
Oh, yes.
Or Star Trek 6 was a pretty bad scene to watch.
Yeah.
And then there was the one where the guy could project his dreams in other people and...
Yep.
So yeah, but I don't think we've reviewed that one yet, so we can't talk about it too much.
And there's these ones where aliens take over Troy without her permission.
Right.
Yeah. That happens a lot.
Poor Troy.
Those are the episodes where it was supposed to be Guinan, but Whoopi's like, nah, I'm not going to be here for that. Sorry. And back to the letter. I also want to say thank you for this podcast. It's been a discouraging week, to say the least. I'm not happy with how the U.S. election turned out. And despite my best efforts, it's made me less optimistic for the future. I don't want to have an attitude of defeatism, so I've been trying to immerse myself in what makes me happy and gives me faith and optimism. Thanks again. Now, if you'll excuse me, it's hard to look serene and exotic with the data pad in my hand. Also, can I get some glue? I don't actually know what'll happen next time we go to warp. Tack out. Is that tack hanging off the back now?
Well, it's, yeah. That's not, you're not supposed to really be that close to the nacelles. Okay, our next one is also from T'Kern Golem. Ahoy, Captain Chris, Doc Carey, First Mate Mike, and Ben the Scallywag, and all ye atmosphere lubbers. Avast, tis I, Tech Argen the Glum, Master of the Mast, Sailor of the Sail, Star of the Starboard. As you know, I've been doing me duty hanging out on the hull of this spacefaring vessel like a majestic refrigeration magnet. I didn't think I breathed air, but after 2 weeks without it, I think I may be suffering the ill effects of oxygen deprivation. I whittled my hand down into a hook for some reason, and I swear one of my legs is wooden now. Personally, I think it has something to do with the white space whale who swore vengeance after the loss of his ship. He's had it out for me ever since. But speaking of waiting in the dark, in Purgatory Shadow, well, shiver me to Lyrium D. Wait, let me fiddle with the translator. There. This is one of those great episodes that's so awesome it's hard to talk about, especially when the last people who reviewed it know why it's so great. Garak remains my favorite character on DS9 because he's cynical, mysterious, duplicitous, and charming. All things I admire in a captain as well. Incidentally, we have another mole event scheduled this week, and we need your RSVP. Like many episodes in Garak's arc, this one ran the risk of revealing too much information about him and spoiling the mystery or revealing something that doesn't fit the character. And had they not had episodes like this, Garak ran the risk of becoming stale and boring. But it fits. It fits so well, you'd think it was all planned out from the beginning, much like Carrie's medical diagnoses. And Tane's speech has that effortless perfection that could only be achieved with great effort and throwing out what was probably already a good speech. Maybe it hits me in particular because I also have a rigid father who has great difficulty showing any emotional vulnerability. Now, I don't think Tane exiled Garak to protect him. I'm pretty sure it was for the perceived needs of Cardassia and his own well-being. He seems like a hard ass to the bitter end, which makes his story all the more compelling. Tane doesn't care enough about Garak to help him in any way and continually pushes him harder to get the most use out of him. He therefore has no reason to comfort him with a lie, even on his deathbed. Tane doesn't love Garak in any traditional sense, but he is truly proud of him, which is the closest thing he has to love.
I think he loves him like you would love a perfect tool.
Yes.
That never has failed you. It's always accomplished everything you've needed to accomplish with it.
Yep. I think this shows the difference between traditional Cardassian and Obsidian Order agents. Regular Cardassians value their own families, which makes them a status symbol, but also a target for others, Dukat. Obsidian Order agents aren't allowed to have any emotional attachment to family that couldn't be dropped in an instant. Basically, an entire organization of pragmatic sociopaths keeping tabs on a society of pompous, jingoistic nepotists.
Nice.
The biggest problem I have with this episode is how Garak willingly divulges how frustrated he is with Tane's dismissal. It should have been Bashir prying in and Garak giving him enough clues to figure it out. That might have happened right before the camera started to roll, but as a storytelling device, it appears that Garak is just so frustrated with his father that he's venting his feelings to Bashir. That just isn't his style. Even if he's to the point And to that point, and wants to get it off his chest, he would still find a way to make it a mind game. It's like the Fonz admitting he has, you know what I, you know what I mean.
You
the
know,
Fonz admitting he was never mind. Yes.
I also think it may have been a way to distract Julian from the fact that he had his claustrophobia.
Oh, maybe
that was easier. It was easier and more comfortable to admit frustration at Tane because everyone saw that, but
right.
He didn't want anybody to see that he was afraid.
Yeah, that could be. The other problem is that the Bashir thing where he was retroactively secretly a changeling over the course of several episodes, even though it doesn't make narrative sense in those episodes. Star Trek Discovery writers, take note of planning ahead for surprises. Also, please don't suck. Please! Anyway, those are pretty small nitpicks because the rest is so great. Hope you do part two when DS9 comes back in rotation. But I will be breaking myself off of the hull soon for my parents coming aboard. Tis the season for family, you see, and me whole family wants to see what see the wee little tack. Don't you worry about not having a figurehead for the ship. Glitter Golem will take me place. Not sure what he's doing inside. Tack out.
Our next is from City. Hi, everybody. It's been a while since I had time to listen to any TNL until now. I'm at my desk all the time. Insurrection. I watched the movie again after listening to the review. A few points to note. In the past 24 months, they've been challenged by every major power in the quadrant. The Borg, the Cardassians, the Dominion. Takes place after First Contact around the time of the Dominion War. Library scene. Sona's ship was on file. The Baku left their homeworld to start over in this colony. The Sona revolted a century before and left.
Oh, okay. So she's saying they left before they even went to that planet.
Hmm.
I thought that though they mentioned that they sent them away, and Picard's love interest is pretty old.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't get that feeling.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's possible. They just, because we do know that they came there from another planet to change their ways. Okay, go ahead.
Tachyon Bursts was fire on Data to force him to reset shield harmonics. The Sona was going to use the holodeck ship to transport to Baku. To transport the Baku. When Picard questioned how they could get Ruafo and crew... I almost said it, yes.
Yeah.
When Picard questioned how they could get Ruafo and the crew off their ship without them knowing, he got inspired. This is the first movie a CG Enterprise was used instead of a model. Data flew the captain's yacht when attacking the Sona ship. The tub scene was in crew quarters. They reused the tub from a TNG episode.
Ha!
Yeah.
Up the long ladder. One word made it enjoyable for me. Bring Lodi.
Bring Lodi?
Bring Lodi, yes. Google. I don't know if you've noticed, there is no Google in the Star Trek universe. TNG and DS9 started before Google existed. Enterprise never had it, seemingly. There was only ever a database. When it came to watching TV and science fiction, my mom would say, it is not real. It is crunch time until February for me, then vacation. Until next time.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll actually have something like Google in the new Star Trek.
They do.
Since it exists.
They can't.
What do you mean they can't? Oh, because it's going to be old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they do.
Well, they. Computer. I mean, technically, yeah, you just ask the computer a question and it tells you.
That's what I do with Alexa.
Right.
Right. Well, and I think what it comes down to is you can't say, tell me. Well, I don't know. I don't know why they'd look through they page through the files as much as they do.
Right.
Because there's other times where they're just like, computer.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, though, when did Deep Space Nine start?
1993.
Okay, so that's a year before Alta Vista and Yahoo. And those first search engines started.
Right.
Actually, there were some beforehand, but I don't remember them. I was using the web at the time, so it's not like it was... Oh, I do remember Archie, I guess. That was... Right. Nobody would know that stuff.
Right.
All right. That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our discussion of feedback. Until next time, on behalf of everyone here at Treknologic, love long and prosper.